Recently, I had the immense pleasure of reading the classic Stephen King novel, It. It is the story of a group of children who take it upon themselves to go toe-to-toe with an ancient and unimaginable evil that permeates a small town called Derry, Maine. This evil doesn't just take the form of scary monsters or a creepy clown, but it's actually infused with the town itself and its people, often manifesting as violent racism, misogyny, and homophobia. And the more I read of it, the more I felt this sense that our world has its own it lurking beneath the surface, born of the original sins of colonization, domination, and oppression, absorbed into the very air we breathe, the water we drink, and the ground we live off of. In King's novel, it preys on imagination, the most terrible imagination of all, fear. It takes the form of the thing that you fear the most and terrorizes you into submission in order to destroy you. Not only that, but it uses that fear to control the people of Derry into doing terrible things to one another, or even just looking the other way when someone else does. But the other side of that is that because it feeds on imagination, that also makes it especially vulnerable to imagination. And I think the it in our world is the same way. I think when we imagine our world as it could be, we can do real, lasting damage to the structures of violence and dehumanization that our world has been built on. Imagination is an extraordinarily powerful thing, but I believe that it is far more powerful than we even realize. I believe that human beings have only scratched the surface of the ways in which we have the power to create and shape our reality through the power of imagination. For me, imagination is a spiritual practice and a theological act. It connects us with the creative powers of all existence as we co-create our universe together. I guess it's no surprise then that much of my theology comes from the fictional stories that I live and breathe. I mean, sure, the creation story in Genesis is pretty cool, but in J.R.R. Tolkien's The Silmarillion, seven angels create the world using the most beautiful melodies and harmonies imaginable, and only when one of them rebels and starts making music that clashes with the rest for his own aggrandizement does evil make its way into the world. All of the stories we tell matter, whether they're real or not, because not only do they tell us profound things about who we are as human beings, but they shape us and our world in unimaginable ways. In 1962, the idea of a strong female lead was nearly unheard of, let alone the cliche it's become today. Then an incredible woman named Madeleine L'Engle came along with a book called A Wrinkle in Time and paved the way for so many to follow, including Ursula K. Le Guin, God rest her soul, a trailblazer in her own right and one of the most radically imaginative minds of the 20th century, whose stories regularly turned concepts of gender and capitalism upside down. If it weren't for these women, perhaps we never would have been blessed with such strong women as Princess Leia from the Star Wars movies, or Sarah Connor from the Terminator films. In 1968, We hadn't yet landed on the moon, but an extraordinarily imaginative book and movie came out of the minds of Arthur C. Clarke and Stanley Kubrick, respectively, entitled 2001: A Space Odyssey. 2001 predicted or even inspired a vast plethora of technology that came after it. I mean, they even had iPads, for crying out loud. In the 21st century, the rate of change-making through fiction seems to be rising exponentially. The Harry Potter and Hunger Games series inspire a whole new generation to radical resistance against fascism. The rise of Afrofuturism through the works of N.K. Jemisin and Nnedi Okorafor and the revival of Marvel's Black Panther portray a present as well as a future that is not only unapologetically black, but an Africa that is technologically advanced and resource-rich in spite of Western colonialism. Women writers, queer and trans writers, writers of color, and all the intersections in between are deconstructing patriarchy, homophobia, transphobia, and white supremacy through the stories they tell more and more every day. It's a pretty cool time to be alive. The Golden Key was one of the first fantasy stories ever written. Published in 1867 in England, this story, which exemplifies the awakening of the childhood imagination, has a bit of a dark side to it. In 19th century England, the Industrial Revolution was sort of just beginning to take off. And because labor laws were, let's say, not what they are today in the mid-19th century, society was just beginning to grapple with a rise in childhood mortality. Stories like this are one of the ways they did that. What was behind that door wasn't just the wonders of the imagination. It was heaven. The Golden Key, like so many of the most beloved scriptures of the world's religions, is in some way a grappling with death, a way of making meaning of our own mortality in a world that forces us to confront that mortality and won't allow us to look away. Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying." It's not just prophetic, it's pastoral, tending to the deep, dark fears and doubts that define our lives. Imagination is pastoral. It gives us hope when hope is hard to find and makes us feel seen, heard, and understood. I know the first time I saw the Disney Pixar movie Inside Out, I cried at how much it made me, as a person living with chronic mental illness, feel like someone out there understood. When joy finally realizes that sadness does actually have a purpose, I just lost it. In the movie Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, a prequel to the original Star Wars that tells the story of a ragtag rebel group fighting against the fascist empire by stealing the plans to the Death Star against seemingly insurmountable odds. One of the main characters is played by a Mexican actor named Diego Luna. Not long after the movie came out, Luna shared a story from a fan on his Twitter account. This fan writes, "I took my father to see Rogue One today. I've wanted to take him for a while. I wanted my Mexican father, with his thick Mexican accent, to experience what it was like to see a hero in a blockbuster film speak the way he does. And although I wasn't sure if it was going to resonate with him, I took him anyway. When Diego Luna's character came on screen and started speaking, my dad nudged me and said, "He has a heavy accent." I was like, "Yep." When the film was over and we were walking to the car, he turns to me and says, "Did you notice that he had an accent?" I said, "Yeah, Dad, just like yours." Then my dad asked me if the film had made a lot of money. I told him it was the second highest grossing film of 2016, despite it only being out for 18 days in 2016, since the new year had just come around. He then asked me if people liked the film. I told him it had a huge following online and great reviews. He then asked me why Diego Luna hadn't changed his accent. And I told him that Diego has openly talked about keeping his accent and how proud he is of it. And my dad was silent for a while. And then he said, "And he was a main character." And I said, "He was." And my dad was so happy. As we drove home, he started telling me about other Mexican actors that he thinks should be in movies in America. Representation matters. End quote. Another similar story from an anonymous internet user. They write, "I took my little brother, who falls on the autism spectrum, to see Guardians of the Galaxy. And after one particular scene, he lit up like a Christmas tree and screamed, 'He's like me. He can't do metaphors.'" And for the rest of the film, my brother stared at Drax in a state of rapture. So for the last 6 days, I have heard my brother repeatedly quote all of the Drax lines from the movie verbatim, one of his talents, begin studying vocabulary test words, and tell everyone he knows that people with autism can also be superheroes. Now, I'm not saying that Drax the Destroyer is or was ever intended to be autistic. All I'm saying is that it warmed my heart to see my brother have an opportunity to identify himself with a character known for his strength, badassness, and honor. And that is pretty damn awesome. So while I adored Guardians of the Galaxy as a great, fun-loving film with cool characters, I can do nothing but thank Marvel Studios and Dave Bautista for finally bringing a superhero to the screen that my little brother can relate to. Imagination is pastoral. Now, speaking of Dave Bautista, some of you may not realize this, but today is actually WrestleMania. That's right. That's right. Your preacher watches professional wrestling. And trust me, I am very much familiar with all of the ways that wrestling has been and continues to be racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic, and problematic in any number of ways. Some of you may have seen John Oliver's segment this week about the wrestlers and their status as independent contractors and some of the benefits that they are denied. I know all about it. Trust me. But I also know this. I know that 5 years ago, an unlikely underdog hero who had been the victim of injustice after injustice occupied the wrestling ring and staged a sit-in on live television until the authority gave him what he deserved, a championship match at WrestleMania. I mean, it was a storyline, but still, you know. And tonight, for the first time in the 34-year history of WrestleMania, a women's wrestling match is going to be the main event. Tonight, a black man who has paid his dues for 11 years, making sacrifice after sacrifice, and getting passed up time and time again because he wasn't championship material, who 5 years ago joined a team with two other black men under the premise that, quote, if we stick together, there's no limit to what we can accomplish. Who just a few weeks ago went on live television and told the owner of WWE to his face that he has never allowed someone like me to succeed. That man is poised to now become the first ever 100% black WWE champion and the second black WWE champion of all time. The first was Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who is half black, half Samoan. Just to give you an idea of how hard it was for even a half black man to become champion, you had to be The Rock. Imagination is prophetic. In my dorm, above my altar, I have a bookshelf that I call my book altar. The books on this shelf, more than anything else, form the foundations of my theology and my values. Harry Potter and the Hunger Games, Stephen King's It, a number of books by Nnedi Okorafor and N.K. Jemisin. If I could extend it beyond books, I would probably put The West Wing up there as a moral and theological masterpiece. NBC's The Good Place as a treatise on moral philosophy. Star Wars as a portrait of resistance and representation and the politics of theater wars and the dangers of dogma and lust for power. Star Trek Deep Space Nine as a meditation on the intersections of religion and politics and a commentary on the geopolitics of occupation and transition to independence. The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings as an example of the extraordinary capacities of very ordinary, simple people. Rent as an artistic expose on the HIV/AIDS crisis of the 1980s. An animated short film called The Second Renaissance as a post-colonial analysis of the Matrix universe from the perspective of the machines. I could go on and on and on. Imagination is pastoral. Imagination is prophetic. But more than anything else, imagination is spiritual. It gives us hope. It inspires us. It forms our world. Nothing that the human race has ever done could have been done without imagination. In fact, in my own belief system, nothing that exists would exist without imagination. It is the stuff that binds the universe together. It is wholeness. The golden key unlocks the door to the infinite reaches of the imagination. I've told you all about several of mine. What is your golden key?